send messages to Rome saying that Augustus is dead and that for the time being, at least, the command of the Roman Empire devolves upon me.
Tiberius, are you trying to deny me any part in the governing of this empire?
Yes, Mother.
Oh, welcome back. Life of Tiberius, episode 19. Papa yes. Bear, what's going on in Virginia?
Not much, just trying to survive the cold and trying to survive flu season. So far, I'm the last man standing of my family. Pretty proud about that. But we'll see. We'll see.
Tough.
Yeah. You know, I'm getting ready for these shows tonight. I'm starting to feel a little sympathy for Tiberius and the Senate. I mean, they're coming at coming from different directions. It's an almost impossible situation since no one's a mind reader. But we'll let the listeners decide for themselves. It's just that they can't seem, to me, to get on the same track, and they keep having to reinvent the wheel every time an issue comes up. But that's just my take on it.
Yeah, look, over the next few episodes, I think we're going to look at the evolving character of Tiberius. You know, based on Tacitus mostly, a little bit of Suetonius, but looking at how when Tiberius got the job in 14 CE, for quite a while, for the first, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, he seemed to be pretty reasonable, downplaying himself, downplaying his power, trying to push the Senate to do more, to accept more responsibility. But for a whole variety of reasons that we'll explore, Senate basically didn't want to do that, and he got... And in a series of disappointments and calamities and tragedies that happened to Tiberius, his character changed over that 10-year period to the point where he basically just said, fuck you all, I'm fucking out of here. But I want to sort of explore the – I mean, Tiberius is sort of I've always felt a little bit sorry for him, as you said. I've always felt like he didn't really want it. He didn't want the life, but he kind of got for. He's a bit like the son of a mafia don,
right?
You know, he just wants to be a poet. He wants to be a. He wants to
wear turtlenecks. do like that while he's reading his poetry. You know, just you know, no, but
he would go to poetry slam events, drink Guinness. And would say, Rome, home. Is Rome my home?
Where is?
There's a dome in Rome. And that'd be it. And then he'd pause and then people would clap.
Yeah.
And he'd go and smoke some more weed. And that's all he wanted. He was a simple man. He wanted simple things, but they were like, "Nah, you're the boss's son, stepson. You gotta
step up,
do your bit, play the part."
I think we're going to find that they both had the Senate and Tiberius had differing expectations. They never aligned, and so they're always not sure of what the other person's going to do, where to put their next step. And we're going to see that time and time again. And you're right. I think he's going to get frustrated at the end of all of this and just do his own thing. You know, because who wants to come after Augustus? Nobody in their right mind wants to try to compete with that. But like you said, he's been made for this job. He doesn't really have a choice.
So we'll look at a variety of stories that Tacitus reports and sort of look at the good and the bad of the Thibaut years.
Yeah.
Now, you know, Tacitus, despite the fact that, I remember when we had our friend who wrote the book about Germanicus, Lindsay, on, he was, he was helping us understand or appreciate the fact that Tacitus doesn't like Tiberius.
Right.
Tacitus is trying to villainize Tiberius rightly or wrongly. He's pro-Germanicus, he's anti-Tiberius. He sees Tiberius in many ways as the beginning of the dark times. Now, whether or not that's fair or biased because he's writing under the era of the Vespasians, I don't know. But he also does give Tacitus credit from time to time.
Tiberius.
And fucking
I got your back.
Tacitus gives... Thanks, buddy. Thanks. Wait till we get to Tacfarinas. Then we'll have Tacitus, Tacfarinas, and Tiberius. Walked into a bar.
One bumped their head. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he does give Tiberius credit. So there's this one story in the year 15 where there was a serious outbreak of rioting in a theater.
Ooh.
Now, apparently the actors, I am an actor, were on stage insulting the elected magistrates. And the people started to attack the actors. I think people were jumping to the defense of the magistrates. And Tacitus says that some soldiers and a centurion, as well as some of the just general public, got killed in the riot that broke out. And a tribune of a Praetorian cohort was wounded. So the Senate then debated a motion that actors who cause trouble by speaking out against elected officials should be subject to flogging.
Damn. Boy, the theater was a lot more intense in those days.
Well, I think Donald Trump's just recommended the... I think with the national emergency that he's declared today, I think that was part of it. You know, saying national emergency, we've got to build a wall and we've got to flog... actors who say tweet mean things about me. I think it was the second part of his platform, his national emergency. Now, Augustus had rendered actors immune to the scourge, as Tacitus calls it.
Right.
Now, I don't know about you, but this sounds like a wonderful idea to me, Ray. Public flogging of actors. I love it. I don't know why we haven't done this before.
Do you mean like for bad performances or for speaking about politics or both?
No, just general. Just look, the deal is, listen.
Yeah.
George Clooney, you can be ridiculously handsome.
Right.
You can get paid millions of dollars, be beautiful, have this amazing lifestyle.
Right, right.
But here's the deal. Once a month, you get flogged in public. We haul you out. It's live. It's televised.
Right. Not the face.
No, not the face. No, not the face. We're not barbarians. We're just going to strip you naked, tie you to some stocks.
Oh, I'm in.
And 100 lashes with a cat of nine tails.
Damn.
Whether or not we pour salt in it depends on your last performance.
Right. That sounds fair.
I think that's fair. You can be rich and beautiful and have everything, but we get to flog you in public once a month. Oh, I think that's reasonable. Here's my one caveat: it doesn't apply to documentary hosts.
True, absolutely.
Documentary hosts, because we're not actors.
No,
really. We may do a from time to time in a documentary we may do an accent.
Right.
That's not
acting.
Not. Technically not acting, no.
No.
And we're not getting paid, so, it's, if you want to be, it should be, the number of lashes that the actor gets should be indexed to their income.
Ooh.
And level of fame. Right. So the richer, more famous you are, the more lashes you get. I think that's a reasonable, I don't think that's, look, nobody knows more about whipping people than me, Ray, and I think that's reasonable trade.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Do we know much about why Augustus had them immune from such things? I mean, was he like, at the end of the day, I'm the emperor or whatever you want to call me. You're not. You can say all the things you want to say and they're just words or you're just strutting on a stage or whatever. And so I can let that slide. And if that's the case, I can see that coming from Augustus, who was certainly secure in himself. But that doesn't... describe Tiberius very well.
Well, according to Tacitus, it had something to do with Maecenas.
Ah.
Remember, Maecenas loved a bit of the old theatre. Right. He was a great patron of the arts.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ovid was one of his guys. Maybe even who wrote the Aeneid? I'm having a mental blank. What am I asking you?
Oh, God, Aeneid.
Virgil. I think Virgil and Ovid were supported, patronized by Maecenas. And I think, obviously, some of these artists and actors were probably critical of the Augustus regime. And Maecenas was like, man, listen, you gotta let them do their art.
Right.
And so Augustus at some point declared them sacrosanct, basically. They couldn't be touched, the actors, regardless of what they said. Now, there's this big debate in the Senate about overturning this, and nobody liked a good flogging more than Thibaut, especially in the confines of his sex dungeon.
Yes!
But he didn't want to be seen to be overturning one of Augustus's decisions. Particularly, this is in 15, so Augustus has only been dead a year.
Yeah.
Not a good look to be overturning Augustus. He's supposed to be, you know, continuing Augustus's policies.
Right.
Augustus was a god after all, so you don't want to fuck... And the son of God. You don't want to fuck with the decisions of the son of God.
No.
Blessed be his name. So he's not interfering. But that's the thing, is he's not saying one way or the other, yes, I think it should be overturned, no, it shouldn't. He's sitting on the side and letting the debate just happen. His own views do not enter into it.
Hmm. And I guess he's trying to, get the Senate to actually do something, to do some of the work so he doesn't have to make all the decisions, because... You know, when you make decisions, you're probably going to piss off at least 40 to 50% of the people in the city. So let them take care of some of this, especially this semi-smaller matter. But like you said, I mean, people were hurt. People were killed. This has obviously gone up a level. And at the very least, it has to be discussed in the Senate.
I think Thibaut's perspective is, look, I got other things to worry about. Right. Like, this isn't my job. This, you know, I'm just the princess. I'm not,
I'm
not God, you know. My stepfather was God. Right. I'm just Tiberius. I'm just a man.
Right. No, I'm glad you brought that up, because in the next three episodes that we're going to be doing tonight, I think we have to keep in mind that Tiberius, as much as he doesn't want to do this job, but he's been groomed for it, and now he feels a certain connection for keeping Augustus's policies going, like you were saying, I think he really does see himself as a broad stroke kind of guy. Look, my job is to keep this ship of state going along in a general direction that benefits the elite of Rome. I can't be handling all the small... all these smaller matters. And so I don't think it's him being lazy or whatever. I just think he doesn't see that as worthy of his time to a certain degree.
He is basically the Ray Harris to my Augustus. You don't see it as lazy because that's how you operate.
You're
the Tiberius of this show. You're like, listen, I'm not going to get into the details here. I'm just going to keep the show moving. I'm just going to skip ahead, Reader's Digest it a little bit.
Exactly.
Just get to the... I just want to get to the end of this recording session so I can go and lie down with my dog.
If you do remember the very first five shows we did, that is pretty much what I did. You would go off on something, and then I would go... So anyways, back to the storyline, and then it got muddled from there. But that, at one point, was my legitimate position.
Well, according to the iTunes reviews, that is still your job. Ray keeps the story moving while Cameron disappears down rabbit holes. And I'm like, no,
if anything, I mess it all up.
It's because he has eight lines of notes in front of him, and the only thing he has to say is...
Okay.
The next line of his notes.
Right.
Anyway, so back to the Senate debate. So the tribune of the people, Decimus Haterius Agrippa, vetoed this bill to whip actors.
Right.
And was violently attacked by our old friend Asinius Gallus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this Agrippa, by the way, I think I mentioned him in our last episode, but he is the son of very famous orator and senator Quintus Haterius, who we definitely mentioned in an earlier episode.
Right.
And his wife was a daughter of Agrippa.
Ooh.
One of the ones who wasn't dead.
Right. That's important. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So anyway, after this big debate, Haterius's veto was successful and the actors were still free from being whipped. I think big disappointment, disappointing outcome there. Could have changed the course of history forever. But that's how it turned out.
Yeah. And that wasn't the only drama in that year of 15. Obviously the, Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. But other regulations were introduced to preserve the peace at theatrical performances. Tacitus says many enactments were passed to fix the amount of their pay.
Right.
And to check the disorderly behavior of their partisans, of these, the chief were that no senator should enter the house of a pantomime player.
Okay.
That Roman knights should not crowd around them in the public streets.
Hmm.
That they should exhibit themselves only in the theater.
Right.
And that the praetors should be empowered to punish with banishment any riotous conduct in the spectators.
Ooh. So there are checks. Now, yeah.
So senators not allowed to go to the homes of actors.
Oh, come on. I can go to a prostitute's home, but I can't go to... Never mind.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, we would prefer you to do that because, you know, it's a separation of... actor and state is what they're looking for.
Exactly.
And the Roman knights should not crowd around them in public streets. So, like, I gather that these actors, some of them, I imagine the females, were walking down the street and you had equestrians basically crowding around them going, hey, you want to take a ride on my horse? And yes, that is a euphemism.
Can I get a private...
banning that.
Yeah, yeah.
So actors, I never really thought of actors. I know we've read about different actors that had levels of celebrity back then, but apparently the levels of celebrity that some of these actors had even back in these days was a lot higher than I had imagined.
I think you're right. And the other thing is, I don't think we've ever once mentioned gladiators who were also extremely popular. Some of them were stars. Some of them were like, you know, professional athletes of today making tons of money and banging all types of women or whatever. But I don't think we've ever said once that they would go out and make political statements. I think these actors are using their popularity and they're on the stage and they have people gathered around them. And sometimes they stray off because I know that the actors were trying to cause trouble for a higher wages. And so you're right. I think Tiberius, who is a traditionalist, who is conservative, finds a way to, you know, to tamp down not only the actors, but also the people that like them, the supporters, the audience. And he does come in the Senate, through the Senate, is able to kind of calm the situation down. But this is something that might come back again. But I think you're right. I think they're using their popularity to stir up trouble. And that is unacceptable.
Well, two things there. I mean, according to Tacitus, Tiberius didn't intervene in this discussion at all.
Right, right. No, but I'm saying, I'm sure he was happy with the outcome. I'm sorry, that's the point I was trying to make.
Okay. Secondly, I don't know that I would depict it as actors trying to cause trouble. I mean, there was a great tradition that they'd inherited from the Athenian playwrights and satirists where you would make fun of the people in power, satirize them. I think that was a well-established tradition in Rome. And you could get away with that in the days of the Republic.
Mm-hmm.
You could satirize people, I guess, at most points of the Republic. But obviously in these days, it's getting a little bit more difficult to satirize. People are getting a little bit more touchy.
Yeah.
I think it's sort of it's true when you look at the health of a city state, a democracy, a country.
Mm-hmm.
The more secure they are, the more able you are to poke fun at your leaders and criticize them. The more unstable it is, the more people get upset about making fun of people in power. More punishments come with that.
I think you're right, except for that, like the point you were making a second ago, it's no longer a republic. Tiberius is in charge. And again, this goes back to my basic premise about the Senate is trying to anticipate their leader who does, we can say it as nicely as you want, but he does have power of life and death over everybody. He might have to go through some motions, but he can ruin the career of anybody. So here's the Senate trying to appease their guy, trying to make sure that no one hurts his feelings. We've already discussed that Thibault doesn't really like the theater. He doesn't like having to deal with the people. And so that puts the Senate in a weird situation. But at the very end of the day, when you have people that are dying, who are being killed over this, something has to happen. But you're right, the veto does stay. There are some punishments that are agreed upon, but I would think that Tiberius is semi-happy with, they do now, the actors, have some checks on them that they did not have before. I think he would have been okay with that.
And the spectators.
And the spectators,
exactly.
You could
be banished right. If you create a riot in a theater.
We won't whip you, but we'll kick you out of the country.
Yeah. All right. You wanted to tell another story?
No, just in that same year, just to show you how Tiberius's first year, because you have to remember, he can't feel very secure in his new position. In that same year, not only do you have these riots, but the Tiber floods. And the Tiber floods a lot. But the point is, this is something that the Senate can handle. There's no political ramifications in some sense. It's just something that you fix. And as far as I could tell, the Senate does handle it on their own. And I think Tiberius would have been equally miffed if he had been brought into that. It's like, can't you even deal with the flooding? You know, whether it's helping people get to a new place or help maybe buy them food because they're whatever's been washed out. But the Senate does handle this. And I think that's just one of the things that Tiberius was probably pleased that he did not have to handle. So the Senate is good for something.
Yeah, but the flip side is they are growing more and more useless, which isn't difficult to understand. I mean, obviously, the situation has changed. They have the second generation now, maybe even the third generation, if you think Julius Caesar was the first iteration of it, of an all-powerful dictator. And the Senate, you know, the great families have sort of been eradicated to a large extent or nullified, kneecapped, hamstrung. And the Senate has been stacked full of nouveau homos, people who made their wealth from military ventures with Augustus and Tiberius. So they become less and less effective, more and more scared to make a decision in case it upset Thibault.
Right.
So the next example that Tacitus has is the following year in 16, Tiberius announced that he was going to leave the city for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was going to Mar-a-Lago just
I miss to play golf. Yeah. I don't feel right unless I'm swinging a stick. Yeah.
Or he was going off to scope out his sex dungeon, one of the two. So it was suggested in the Senate that all Senate business should be postponed until he returned.
Oh, come on.
They're like, well, if he's going on a holiday, we should all have a holiday. What's the point of us being here if our Lord and Master isn't here to watch over us? Now, our old mate Piso, piece of shit, was still alive back then, proposed that the Senate should continue to meet, saying, you know, maybe we should actually, I don't know, work for a living, do our fucking jobs. But again, our friend Asinius Gallus, Vipsania's husband, who keeps popping up in these stories, Tacitus loved to write about Asinius Gallus. There's like 400 senators, but the one he keeps talking about is Asinius Gallus. He argued for postponement.
Yeah.
Basically said, look, anything that we discuss without Tiberius being here, is people are going to assume it was trivial anyway, because they're not going to take it seriously.
Right.
If we're having a conversation about stuff and he's not here.
Yeah.
So this debate is going on in the Senate, Ray.
Yeah, and if you think about it, I mean, he's making a good point. Why should we make all these decisions only to wait for Thibault to come back and to see if we got it right? I mean, that's just very stressful. But now privately, I'm thinking that Thibault probably agreed with Pizzo's, like, you know, you are the Senate. You are supposed to be handling everything. I am the big picture guy, and it is my empire. But because Thibault kept pushing this idea of free debate and free discussion and that he was their servant, he can't really come down on this. He's got to let them go through the motions. So he stays silent. The debate does get pretty intense, but Thibault, again, stays quiet during this. And the motion to postpone until he returns wins. And he's probably conflicted about that. But again, this is the new Senate. I think they're starting to get a feel for their master's expectations, and the postponement does win.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're like, we're not even going to bother to show up for work until Thibault comes back from building his sex dungeon.
It's a holiday.
He's doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's another one. The next year, the year 17, Tacitus tells us that a praetor, Vipstanus Gallus, died.
Aww.
And there was a debate in the Senate about who his successor as praetor should be. Now, there were two basic camps. On one side, Germanicus and Drusus, who were both in Rome at the time, were supporting their relative Haterius Agrippa, who we mentioned earlier.
Right.
He was related to both Germanicus and Agrippina.
Ooh.
But the other camp was arguing that the law said that preference should go to men with three children.
And whose law was that?
Which Haterius Agrippa did not have. This would have been Augustus's law.
Exactly.
Haterius Agrippa didn't have three children. There were other perfectly fine candidates that did.
Yeah.
So they're going, no. Not to him. There are other people who should get the job because they've done the right thing and had lots of good Roman sons, children. But Germs and Drew were trying to bend the law to the benefit of their friend and relative. What do you think about this one, Ray?
This is a tough one because, I mean, I can just imagine Tiberius watching his son trying to bend the Senate to his will. And you've got to be thinking, Thibault's thinking, one day I won't be here. Maybe my son will take over. Yeah, Germanicus's kid. Yeah, whatever. But it had to be fascinating for him to go, here's my son who I want all the best for. But at the same time, he's going against one of Augustus's laws. That's just got to have been very hard for him. So I was wondering how he felt about this debate. Was he pleased? Was he pleased with the Senate standing up to his son? Was he pleased with his son for trying to get things his way? Because back in the Roman Republic, that's what you did. That was the whole point of being rich and noble. A position comes open, you work your thing, you try to get a family member in there, and you strengthen your overall family. That's what Rome was all about. And now you have this conundrum, Augustus's views versus the pride in his son. So I really don't know what he was feeling, but that's got to be a very fascinating thing for him to be watching as the Senate is going back and forth on this one.
Speaking of being proud of your sons, I don't know if you saw my post yesterday on Facebook, but one of my boys, Hunter, really just got a job that actually his brother set up for him.
Nice.
Long story, but Hunter starts a job next week at a now defunct jail in Brisbane known as Boggo Road. Long story behind that. It's like a nickname that became its real name. But he starts a job in marketing. It's now like a tourist site. They do like true crime tours in there. It's
cool.
It's not used as a jail anymore. But his great-grandfather, my grandfather, was in jail, was an inmate at Boggo Road Jail in the early 60s. So I thought, you know, I guess that's some sort of progress.
It is. Did he put that on his resume or... No,
he didn't know about it until my mother, his grandmother, told
him
yesterday.
That's hilarious.
My grandfather was in jail for a couple of years for breaking and entering. Apparently, he used to break into the houses of bookies.
Right.
Bookmakers. He would wait till they had a big win at the horses on the weekend. Then he'd break into their house and steal all their money. Because they'd be at the races on the weekend. They couldn't get to the bank until Monday.
Right. Smart man.
So he would steal their money.
Smart man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey. No, well, not smart enough not to get arrested and go to jail for a couple of years.
Still, but, I wonder what Fox is going to be doing there 20 years from now. But anyway, we'll find out.
So there you go. My grandfather was an inmate. My son is actually in the marketing department. So.
Classic.
Oh, proud. Very proud.
Yeah.
I think if Thibault sitting on the corners watching all of this, remember that gif of Michael Jackson from the Thriller days eating popcorn while he's watching
he's got a scary big smile on the big face. Screen?
Yeah, yeah. Michael Jackson, I think he had some plastic surgery, but before he went full, alien slash Diana Ross.
Right.
That's what I think of when I think of Thibault, just sitting on the sidelines eating popcorn, watching these furious debates going on, seeing who's going to win. Right. Now, he wanted to see if the Senate would make some sort of a serious effort to decide between supporting the princes,
right,
or supporting the letter of the law as written by the god himself, Augustus.
Right.
And there's a long debate, and eventually Germs and Drusus win out, and Heterius Agrippa is given the position of praetor.
Right.
So the Senate caved in without Tiberius saying squat. The Senate caved in to the royal family's wishes,
right,
in the form of the princes. So, it's interesting to see that even at this early stage, this is 17, a couple of years after Augustus has died, the Senate is pretty much neutered and ineffective. They caved in like Trump on day 35 of a government shutdown, basically put their tails between their legs and just their noses in the butts of Germanicus, right, and Drusus, and said, whatever you want. So interesting to see that. I think often when we think about the decline of Rome in this period, we blame the emperors, we blame Caligula, and we blame Nero, and we blame these guys for being brutal and corrupt.
Right.
But there's this other side of the story as well. The Senate was really... they're ineffective and they spineless, and they just let it slide inexorably towards blatant brutal dictatorship. They didn't do anything to try and stop it that I'm aware of anyway.
Right. Well, I would love to know after. Okay, so the vote's taken, the princes get their way, and all those who voted against Germanicus and lost probably spent the next couple of days or weeks severely kissing his ass even further. Hey, no hard feelings. I was just doing what I thought was right. Don't hold this against me. Not that I'm saying that you're going to be the next leader, but I'd really appreciate it if you just forgot about all this. But it had to be awkward for those who voted against them and lost.
Maybe. Although, from what we know about Germanicus and Drusus, they seem to be, relatively...
forgiving. Moderate,
moderate, guys. And beloved. We know Germanicus was beloved by the people, particular. But this is another side of Germanicus, and it's actually interesting, given what Lindsay said when he was on the show, that Tacitus is pro Germanicus and anti Tacitus, fucking Tiberius. Tacitus is pro Germanicus and anti Tiberius, but here, he actually tells the story of Germanicus supporting a friend over, the letter of the law. So I don't think Germanicus comes out of this looking particularly good.
Right.
Tiberius, on the other hand, just sat on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Now, there are also instances where Tiberius could scare the fuck out of people, too. Did you read the story about the return of... Decimus Junius Silanus?
I got the broad strokes, and I'll set it up. So in 20, Decimus Junius Silanus, did he come back? No, it was asked of his brother, could he come back to Rome? His brother, I think Marcus, and he was allowed to come back to Rome. And what was his crime? Why was he gone in the first place?
he had gone into voluntary exile after Augustus had formally renounced his friendship.
Which is a big deal. Right.
Because Silanus had been banging Julia the Younger.
Right.
Augustus's only grandchild. This is the... well, he's not his only grandchild, but his favourite granddaughter, I guess.
Right.
This was the child that were... this is the instance where she had been accused of adultery. He exiled her, and then she gave birth to a child, which we assume was the child of Silanus.
Yes.
Who was left on a rock to die under Augustus's orders.
Damn.
Which people subsequently told me was... That was the standard practice for abortion in ancient Rome.
Still, so
not a unique scenario here.
Still,
so but you know, Decimus Silanus, Junius Silanus, saw kind of he wasn't banished from Rome, but his friendship with Augustus was terminated. So he kind of knew that it was probably he wasn't going to get, nobody was going to give him the time of day. In Rome. So he exiled himself. And he's been gone, you know, for, well, at least 6, 7, 8 years, I think. I can't remember exactly when the Julia the Younger thing happened, but it was towards the later years in Augustus's life. So he's been gone for, let's say, nearly a decade.
Yeah.
And his brother, Marcus, who was the Suffolk consul in 15, and highly respected by Thibaut, and in fact, his daughter goes on to marry Caligula, Silanus's daughter. But, you know, he said, hey, Thibaut, can my brother come back? Thibaut's like, yeah, fine, he can come back. And so Marcus Silanus gave a big speech. Thibaut, I'd like to thank you for letting my brother come back. Thibaut said, listen, I'm glad that he's back too. He's been away for a long time and he has every right to come back. There was no law or decree of the Senate that had ordered him to leave in the first place. So no biggie.
Right.
No biggie smalls that he comes back. However,
he said,
Augustus's renunciation of his friendship still holds, which means I cannot be his friend. And as a result, Silanus lived in Rome, but never got another job, never got a title, never got anything to do because you're kind of persona non grata if you can't be the if you're the friend of like honestly, what it reminds me of is we were doing our bullshit filter series on Venezuela when the US declared Venezuela under Obama when they declared Venezuela like an enemy of the state.
Right.
That's it. You're basically
done.
Venezuela became the Decimus Junius Silanus of the world then. Of the world. No one wants to be your friend except China and Russia and Cuba.
Yeah.
No one wants to be your friend if America says they don't like you anymore because it's like, well, fuck, if we piss those guys off, who knows what the consequences of that could be to us.
Yeah.
So he became persona non grata.
So
Well, I was just going to say that if Thibaut's disapproval can ruin someone's career opportunities, then he's clearly, despite his protests, not just a regular senator like all the rest. It's obvious that everyone knows that he's the man.
Yeah. Well, see, that was just, that's my thing, because not 5 minutes ago we were saying Augustus said the actors could not be touched. And now, even though that still holds true, there are now various punishments for them. They can be exiled, and people in the crowd can be exiled, and even politicians can be exiled if they hang out with them. So at one moment, we're not really respecting Augustus's views, and then the next time that we are. So again, I just think this puts the Senate in an impossible situation. I think from issue to issue, they do not know with 100% certainty how Thibaut is going to react to each situation. That's just got to be hard for these people. If you keep moving your ass, how can I kiss it? I just think things are very hard for them, and they're just doing the best they can. And of course, they're going to be squeamish about everything because they don't know how he's going to react to each situation.
It's just what you said to me in Florence.
I yelled it over the rooftops. But you're right. How can he go on about being the first among equals when he can just say, yeah, I no harm, no foul. I just can't be your friend. And that's enough to end someone's political career.
To be fair, though, I don't think he did reverse Augustus's ruling on the actors, and neither did the Senate.
But they did add punishment.
There were no punishments for the actors.
Oh, it was the exile, right?
Their pay got capped, which, again, I think is a good idea for Hollywood. No one needs to get paid $20 million for a film. Are you fucking kidding me? That's insane. Cap the pay of actors and CEOs and sporting people.
Even if it's a million dollars,
I'm happy. Okay, give them $1 million. Yeah. That's all. You don't need to get paid more than $1 million to read some
lines. Just make more movies. Yeah, yeah, and action.
Like, how hard is it? Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, talking to, you know, my son Hunter again, he wants to be an actor. He's going to move to LA at the end of this year, and he wants to be an actor, a big star. And yeah, he and I have had this debate around the pay of actors, and he's like, oh, you don't realize how hard it is having to go to the gym all the time and stay in shape. I'm like, dude, people go to the gym for fun. It can't be that hard.
They pay to go to the gym.
Yeah, we pay to go to the gym. Can't be that hard to go to the gym. But then they got to read all these lines and memorize all these lines. I'm like, oh my God, well, here's my small violin playing for them.
Yeah. Try writing that shit.
Anywho.
Yeah.
So the actors weren't punished. They weren't punished with potential banishment. It was the people in the audience who could be banished, not the actors. Gotcha.
Okay.
You weren't paying attention as usual. Stop masturbating the dog and just pay attention.
Fine. Another condition of my work. That's fine.
Now, there were other examples, too, in Tacitus of the Senate being too scared to make a decision. So the next year, in 21, Thibault went to Campania, where he's building his sex dungeon. Right. And the Numidian Berber rebel leader, Tacfarinas, Taco. Right.
Tac the Mac.
Started causing trouble again in Africa. Now, I don't think we've talked about Taco before. And I think we should talk about Taco. He's basically like the Arminius of Africa. He was a deserter from the Roman army who built his own rebel army, and he's trying to kick the Romans out of his ancestral lands, and he did it for about 10 years, starting in 15. So not long after Tiberius had taken the throne. And he's got the problems happening. People will recall that when Augustus died, there were revolutions happening. Excuse me, revolutions happening before Augustus died. We had the things going on in Illyricum. We had things going on in Germany. Then after Augustus died, there's more stuff going on. There's rebels within the Roman army themselves, as well as rebellions happening all over the place. People, you know, the allies or subjugated people seeing his death as their opportunity to rise up. And Taco was one of those in the northern tip of Africa. Now, he had been defeated in 17 by the guy who was the governor, the proconsul of Africa at the time, Marcus Furius Camillus. He used to, he'd give a big speech before each battle. Well, he'd say, "And I will strike down upon thee with great anger and furious Camillus." He defeated Taco in a head-to-head battle and was awarded a triumph for his efforts. And so the Romans thought they'd seen the last of Taco, but like a case of the runs after a night of eating Indian food, Taco just kept coming back.
Well, he had these brilliant, you know, he had these brilliant tactics, hit-and-run tactics. They would be on light horse, very little armor, just a shield, and they would have a bunch of javelins, so they could get within throwing distance of you, throw a couple javelins, hit your men, whatever, cause damage, cause death, maybe kill some animals, and then they could run away. So the Romans are like, if you would stand still, we could so kick your ass. But Tank the Mac and his men do not stay still. They hit and run. They're affecting the grain supplies, because what this all comes down to is, and we don't have to go into detail, but in northwestern North Africa, some of the planes that are being used by the Romans to grow their grain, to send it back to Rome. In fact, I think this might have been feeding the majority of the Romans for a while. Some of these tribes were using some of this land for part of the year to graze their animals. And so the Romans keep encroaching on their territory. You've got these conflicts. But now that Tak the Mak and his men are hitting the Romans, they're looting, they're taking whatever they can. The grain supplies that are going to Rome are affected. They're reduced. The prices go up, and riots start in Rome in 19 because of a lack of food coming from North Africa, their normal breadbasket. So this guy is hitting Rome where it hurts them the most. The belly of the people in Rome, and I think there might be, I can't remember how many people are in Rome at this time, but it's a lot. And you suddenly you have all these disaffected, hungry people that are starving. And now, you know, Rome, the magistrates and Tiberius have to do something about this, because this cannot go on. There'll be more riots if they don't end this soon.
Yeah, I think according to Tacitus, there were riots in Rome in 19 as a result of the grain prices, and those were the result of Tacco disrupting the grain supply.
He knows
now, in 18, Furius Camillus was replaced by Lucius Apronius.
Right.
Apronius, so-called, because he always wore an apron. That had, you know, somebody kissed the chef written on it.
Down low.
Given that as a Father's Day present, wore it everywhere.
Into battle.
Got called Apronius. He was the new proconsul of Africa. Now, he was one of these guys that had been with Germanicus in Germany fighting against Arminius.
Right.
So he had some experience in dealing with these rebel leaders that had some Roman military training. And then Tacco starts launching a series of lightning raids on Roman territory, destroying villages, ransacking them, destroying them, disappearing into the desert again before the Roman forces could get their aprons on. They all had to wear aprons under Apronius as one of the things that he introduced, one of his innovations. Didn't last long, but
no.
He's like, no, it's good.
It's a good look.
It's funny. Like, there's a lot of funny slogans that you can get on our aprons, and the army, they'll see the apron, they'll read the funny message, they'll laugh, and then we kill them while they're laughing. It's brilliant. Brilliant
right.
strategy.
While they're reading, we stab them. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But Tacco was a wake up to this. He was pretty smart. After he had lost his head to head battle, he's just doing this little hit and run operations. But then he made a bit of an error.
Yeah, see, again, he does take what he's learned from working for the Romans, and he modifies his own forces. So they've got some of the benefits of being from Roman training. They got the benefits from being nomads, you know, hit-and-run tactics. But he, like you said, he decides to do something more traditional. So he lays siege to a Roman fort near the river Pagida, which is being held by a cohort of the 3rd Legion, and they're being led by Decrius, I think is how you say his name. But so that you've got this, you've got the Tak the Mak coming in with his men, and they're laying siege to this fort, and the Romans are holding them off pretty good, because if we've learned anything over the years is that the Romans know how to build a fort, so they're doing a pretty good job of holding them at bay. But however, you're dealing with the Romans here. It is embarrassing for the Romans to be sitting there passively and just deflecting attack. That's not what Romans do. That's not what Romans are known for. They're known for getting out there, chewing bubble gum, and kicking ass and taking names. So Decrius decides, to hell with just sitting here, even though it's working, even though we're holding these men off with our fort, it's time for me to lead, or it's time for him to order a sortie. But what he's going to figure out as soon as his men get outside of the fort is that the raiders have a hell of a lot more men than Decrius does.
Yeah, this was his legion was the Legio III Augusta.
Ooh, you can't lose with that name.
Now, according to Tacitus, Decrius considered it disgraceful that Roman legionaries should sit besieged by a rabble of deserters and tramps. So he ordered a sortie outside the 40. That's what he called it. We're going to do
Operation
40 sortie.
Operation sortie 40, 40 sortie. Go. And what happens to Decrius for his efforts?
Well, he and his troops try to break through the siege, through the besiegers, but they get forced back because, as you said, the enemy had far superior numbers. Now, Decrius starts cursing out his standard bearers for not standing their ground. He's like, it's in the title of your fucking job. Stand. That's all. You have one job.
Hold fast. Right.
Hold the flag and stand.
Ignore.
He shouted at his men to follow him, but unfortunately for Decrius, while he's standing there yelling at his men to follow him, he gets shot in a number of places by arrows, including in an eye.
Damn.
He gets an arrow in the eye. Now we've talked about several other people over the course of our shows that got arrows to the eye.
Right.
Ray.
The lungs. Yeah.
Can you remember who they were?
Oh God. I just remember Alexander got an arrow in the lung. What happened to Alexander's father? He lost an eye, but I can't remember how.
Yeah, Philip, I think, got an arrow in the eye. Optothalmus, Monothalmus. Monothalmus, one of Alexander's generals, one of the leaders of what are they called? His successors, the Diadoque. Monothalmus.
Yeah.
He got an arrow in the eye. I think there was someone else too that I'm forgetting during the civil wars with Augustus, took an arrow in the eye. Well, Decrius, long tradition of men in his situation taking an arrow in the eye, like these others. He died. No, he didn't die because he's a real man. He laughed, snapped off the arrow in his eye.
Yeah.
Stabbed a guy with it. Then just stuck it in his other eye.
Just
laughed
to show
maniacally.
Him. I beat you to it.
And hurled himself at the enemy. You think having no eyes is going to stop me? I'm a Roman.
I'll use the force and strike you down.
But his men retreated into their fort. They were like, did you see that? He got an arrow in the fucking eye.
I like
what?
My eyes.
No one told me that could happen. I don't remember that in basic training. They said, by the way, I don't remember anyone saying, you might take an arrow in the eye and live.
Yeah.
What? No.
I don't want to live.
I didn't sign up for that. I was told we're the Romans, we would just travel the world and rape people.
Right,
that's why I signed up. The raping, the pillaging, you know, that's
cashing in.
That's what one said that we would be take an arrow in the eye.
That wasn't in the brochure. That was not in the brochure.
I could have been an actor. I could have been an actor.
Sacrosanct.
Like, I'm out of 5,000.
Well, I got my eyes. Yeah.
Decrius, meanwhile, went down fighting.
Good for
begging them. While he did it, to shoot him in the other eye. He was like, do it. Do it.
I dare you.
Shoot me in the other eye. Come on.
I don't want to witness Roman troops losing. Ugh. Yeah. And they went back in. Yeah. Now
of course.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Go.
No, I was just going to say this is one of those moments because, you know, we just said the Romans have their pride, and so they went out and attacked because they're not defenders. They're attackers. Another thing they're not supposed to be is retreaters. Roman troops are not allowed to retreat or advance backwards without specific orders. And Apronius or no one else had, Decrius had not ordered a retreat because he was too busy trying to pull an arrow out of his eye. So the point is, these men have to be taught a good old fashioned Roman lesson about retreat.
Yeah. Now Tacitus says, on receiving this information about their retreat, Lucius Apronius, successor to Camillus,
right,
alarmed more by the dishonor of his own men than by the glory of the enemy, ventured on a deed quite exceptional at that time and derived from old tradition. He removed their aprons and said, "You don't deserve funny slogans on your aprons." What? Then, with the aprons, he flogged to death every 10th man drawn by lot from the disgraced cohort. He decimated them.
Damn.
So beneficial was this rigor,
mm-hmm,
that a detachment of veterans numbering not more than 500 routed those same troops of Tacfarinas on their attacking a fortress named Thala.
Yeah.
In this engagement, Rufus Helvius, a common soldier, won the honor of saving a citizen's life and was rewarded by Apronius with a neck chain and a spear. To these, the emperor added the civic crown, complaining, but without anger, that Apronius had not used his right as proconsul to bestow this further distinction himself.
Mm. So,
nice work, Rufus.
good on you.
But decimation. Yeah. Apronius is bringing it back, baby.
Yeah. I guess the one thing that's worse than losing an eye is to be that number 10 among 10, where they literally have to club you to death standing around you in a circle. So I imagine when the word of that got out, they're like, fuck this, I'm not running away anymore, because I don't want to end up having to either kill one of my mates or be killed by them. And you're right, it did stiffen the spine. I think it was Crassus? God, I'm trying to remember now. During the, not the social war, but the slave revolt, I'm trying to remember, didn't Crassus use decimation? And it worked because the men were much tougher and much more determined afterwards.
I think Big Julie did too,
yeah,
in Gaul.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
When they were sort of rebelling against his command, a couple of times he had to deal with insurrection.
Damn.
And
that shit works.
He ordered decimation.
Yeah.
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 But it's been a while. Been a while since anyone's decimated the troops, and you got to bring it back from time to time. I think
the Senate in America is overdue myself, but that's just, yeah.
Decimation for Congress.
But again, Tack the Mac got away. Sorry, go ahead.
Did you see that video this week of your Congresswoman Omar going up against Elliot Abrams?
No, I missed that.
Oh, man, you got to watch this. So there's this new Congresswoman, Lihan, I think it is.
Uh-huh.
Lihan Omar. She's a Muslim. She wears a hijab.
Right.
I think she's Kenyan. I saw a thing the other day. She's Kenyan. She's a new congresswoman. So she's on like the House Foreign Affairs Committee.
Right.
And Elliot Abrams, that we've talked about on our Venezuela shows, this is the guy that was found guilty of lying to Congress during the Reagan administration for his role in the Iran-Contra affair. He's the guy that ran death squads in El Salvador and Nicaragua for Reagan. He was found guilty of lying to Congress, but was then pardoned by George Herbert Walker Bush.
Right.
He is now, as we said on the Venezuela show, has been given basically the job of running American operations in Venezuela, the soft coup that's going on down there.
Yeah.
We did, by the way, if you don't listen to our Bullshit Filter series, we just did three very long episodes about the soft coup in Venezuela. 6 hours, roughly 5 or 6 hours on it.
Mm-hmm.
If you jump on Facebook and want to debate me about Venezuela, that's fine. But my prerequisite is you listen to those 6 hours first. If you come to me and try and talk to me about it and you haven't listened to those 6 hours, I'm going to go, listen, don't waste my time. Go listen to that first and then we can talk about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's appearing in front of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and she went after him. Ilhan Omar just went after him hard. She's this little tiny little woman wearing a hijab. She's dark skinned, very pretty, and she basically opened her with a big smile, sweet smile, saying, "Thank you for coming here today, Mr. Abrahams. You were found guilty of lying to Congress in the 80s, so quite honestly, I don't know why anyone in this chamber would support you or believe anything you have to say." And he said, "Well, I'd like to respond to that." She goes, "No, it wasn't a question. It wasn't a question. It was a statement, not a question." He goes, "Well, I'd like to respond." "No, sorry. You can't say anything. This wasn't a question." And she just called him out for like 5 minutes, and he got ropeable that this, that anyone would speak the truth, let alone this hijab-wearing, dark-skinned woman, Muslim woman.
Dragged him.
It was hilarious. It was fantastic to watch. Anyway.
Yeah.
Look it up.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Romans are decimating their own. Taco, it appears, is on the front foot. He is going to liberate, that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
Liberate his country from the Romans. Or will he? Stay tuned. We will finish the Tacfarinas story in episode 20 of The Life of Tiberius.
Send messages to Rome.